Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown,
where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
Tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer.
Welcome to episode 161 of the Brown County Hour. This is Dave Seastrom.
And Sarah Lytle, along with the rest of the crew. This month, our musical guest is Ross DeLong. We'll feature his interview and listen to three original songs from his upcoming album, Geyser.
We have interviews with Lori Owings from IU Health, Justin Jett, Chamberfest with Phil McCown, and our next installment of Stoveside Surveys from Rick Albertson.
We also feature essays from Jim Eagleman and Dave Seastrom.
Our first segment begins as we share a conversation we had with Ross DeLong, and we'll listen to his tune, Hermit Song. We heard Ross DeLong playing at the Brown County Inn and simply had to share this remarkable young man with you. Ross chats with Sarah Lytle about his upcoming debut album, Geyser, and you get a sneak preview of three tracks from it. IU Health Manager Lori Owings talks about everything happening inside the new doctor's office building in Nashville, including limited walk-in hours and specialty care.
Hi, I'm Sarah Lytle, and I'm here with the Brown County Hour, and I have a guest in the room that I'm very excited to present and talk to and let you hear some of his music. This is Ross DeLong.
Hi, everybody.
It's good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Yeah, and I first heard you at open mic at the Brown County Inn, and I was very excited to hear you play a couple of songs. And what are you going to play for us tonight?
I got three originals for you tonight off of my upcoming album, Geyser. First one's called Hermit Song, second one's going to be called High Life, and the third one's called Godspeed.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about Hermit Song.
So Hermit Song is a very old one. It came together over many years. I wrote the guitar part for it when I was probably 17, and I'm 25 now, so it's been almost a decade. And then it kept evolving over the next 7 or 8 years. And it's both the oldest and newest song on the record because I wrote the chorus about a year ago, right before I recorded everything. And it's about a lot of things, but partially about how I don't leave my house very often, and that's why it's called Hermit Song. So,
yeah. Okay, yeah. And talking with you, you did mention that your songs are pretty much influenced by suppressed emotions.
This collection of songs for this album revolves around this idea of keeping everything down mm-hmm. for a while until it all comes out like a geyser, right? The title came from a lyric, but that was the thematic element that I really liked about the title, yeah.
So the songs, are they, some of them very uplifting, good emotions, or it's not just at all?
It's a mixed bag, definitely. And I am very, one of the things I obsess over in creating music is how a track list of an album flows. I've been writing down track lists since I was like 5 years old. And a lot of the like mid section of the album is more despairing and, you know, where do I go from here? And then the ending of the album is the final song, Roots, and Godspeed, which is the penultimate song, are kind of about finding an inner peace amid all the chaos.
And you started when you were 5.
Not writing full songs, but I've been thinking about songs and thinking about music and albums and looking at things through the lens of, you know, ordering little pieces of music for a long time. I don't know if five is exactly the age, but yeah.
Piano.
I have been playing piano since I was five. Yeah. That was, my mother started teaching me then. Guitar became my main instrument when I was about 14, picked up the guitar. Yeah.
Okay. So your family's very musical.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Besides playing piano, I was in choir from the time I was really little. My parents actually met up in Fort Wayne doing community musical theater, and that's how I came to be. So there's been music on both sides, from the church and from choirs, as you know, everybody I know in my family makes some kind of music, and that's why it's a big part of my life as well.
Okay, well, it's going to be great. Let's hear a little bit from the Hermit Song.
I've been a nightmare, bright songs in all my dreams, and I spent too much time with TV characters in the background of the scenes, and I log a couple nights at university, feeling like the nation's biggest goddamn fool, scorning your good love for me. But all I remember is last December, a candle burning bright. I put it in the window and let the wind blow it out every night. So come over. The noblest thing to be, and I'm told I wasted my potential when I sang all of the words that they said to speak, and I hold a standard for myself I never reach. When I hold no one in deep, then I wake up with my self-image badly beat. Yeah. So come over, lonesome lover, it's wrong to say I still know you. You're lonely, find me, I've been here all along, alone and wailing on my hermit song.
And that was Hermit Song with Ross DeLong. We're back here with him in the studio. And I would like to know more about some of your musical influence outside the family.
Certainly. I have a lot of influences, but a lot of modern indie rock and indie pop. One of my favorite bands is The Strokes. I'm a big fan of Julian Casablancas' lyricism. I really like Jeff Buckley as well. He's one of the most beautifully tragic figures in music history and has one of my favorite voices ever. I try to channel his voice in what I do. I don't think I even come close to it, but I love his music. I love the Beatles as well. I think Paul McCartney is the greatest pop songwriter ever. And in terms of some other modern influences, the band Big Thief is one. Adrienne Lenker is the songwriter in that band, and she's from Indiana, actually. And then Bon Iver as well makes some of the most hauntingly beautiful modern pop music that I know, and influences me a lot as well.
You had mentioned that your songs are pretty much pop influenced, but story focused, mm-hmm. and inspired a lot by country folk and indie rock. So people are going to get, as you said, a mixed bag from this CD. Is this your first record, Geyser?
This is my first one,
yes. It's the debut then.
The debut, I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah, later in the show, we'll hear more. We'll hear the song High Life. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little about that one.
High Life is one that I wrote while drinking Miller High Life.
Oh, well, there you go.
How it's got its name. But that one, it's a pretty...
Do you slur the words in that while you're singing? No.
It wasn't that many little bit.
Millers.
Okay. No. No, just I was on my first or second when I started okay. that one. But it's loosely inspired by a couple friends of mine that I had at the time that were going through a breakup. And everything I was feeling from watching that. But I like that song a lot. And I think it's one of my poppier ones anyway, so...
Okay. And then how would you describe Godspeed? Or what's the influence or how'd that one come out?
Godspeed, I wrote while driving around Nashville, Tennessee, where I used to live and where I recorded everything as well. Looking at my old house and the corner where I had totaled my first car.
Oh.
Yeah.
And how old were you at this point?
When I lived there, I was 21.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And when I wrote the song, it was almost, it's about a year and a half ago. I was 23 at the time.
Okay.
Yeah. And just a lot of emotions came up, and many of the songs on the record are a lot older, and I felt that I needed one more to kind of tie all the ideas I had together. And it ended up being a song about... not looking back at bad things that have happened to you angrily or bitterly, accepting the moment, accepting what's come in the past, and being present and being grateful to go forward. So that's a lot of heady kind of things, but
you've been through a lot already at this age. Surviving such an auto accident and being able to be here and tell us about it and play such beautiful music.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. Something I think about the accident from time to time is that if I had been about a foot out in the street further, I may not be here anymore. And that's something that's kept me going. And a lot of what the record is about is mental illness and depression and anxiety and what I have been through with that and how I've found a way to move forward, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how do people find out more about you, Ross? How do they find your music? Do you have a website or are you on social media?
Thanks for asking. Yeah, I am on Instagram and TikTok at Ross M. DeLong. It's all one block, phrase, word, whatever.
And DeLong is spelled?
D-E-L-O-N-G. And the middle initial is M as in moonlight. So, but yeah, I'm on those social media platforms. And my artist name on Spotify or Apple Music or wherever you stream is just Ross DeLong without the M in the middle. And... I'm working on getting a website up and all that, but for now, that's where you can find me. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for coming in and being with us. And again, this is Ross DeLong on the Brown County Hour.
Hello, Brown County. This is Lucy Schultz on Brown County Hour, WFHB. I'm here with my new boss, Lori Owings. She's the office manager at the new Nashville clinic, IU Health. Hi, Lori. How are you today?
Hi, Lucy. Hi, Nashville and Brown County.
So we have some changes coming up that we would like to talk with the community and let everybody know. Is there some things you can talk with us about?
Yeah, let's talk about what's going on at the office. Currently, we have three primary care providers, Maureen Garcia, and he's been with IU Health over 10 years. We've got Nina Kuhlman, nurse practitioner. She's been with us three, and Chelsea Budd, going on 1 year. And we have a new addition to our IU Health family in Nashville. Her name is Genevieve Plessinger. She's a local gal, a new nurse practitioner, and she will be called an IAP provider. So an IAP provider stands for Intermediate Access Provider. An IAP provider is a provider that doesn't own a panel of patients, so you won't come see Genevieve and then schedule an appointment to see her again. However, she will be taking care of same-day appointments, hospital follow-ups. We call them hospital follow-ups, and that's where, after you've been discharged from a hospital, we'd like to see you in the office within 7 business or 7 days, because studies show that if we see you within 7 days, it prevents readmission rates. And so that's super important. You need to see that provider. We need to check your new meds and make sure you understand what happened and we understand what happened for follow-up. So that's one thing an intermediate access provider does. Another thing they do is, although they won't schedule new patients as their own, if somebody's interested in seeing Dr. Garcia, Nina, or Chelsea, but they can't get in to see her right away, that the IAP provider can see you until we can fit you into the schedule and get you started in the system. So that's something that's new.
That's great. Yeah. That's fantastic for our community.
It sure is. Currently, we offer aftercare hours. What that means is the providers stop seeing routine patients a little bit early, and we work in up to 8 patients at the end of each day. And these are for acute cold, cough, fever, acute injury, and that means it's happened recently, not something you've had for 2 weeks. And we just want to offer this to patients because we don't want you to have to drive out of the county to go get treated for a cold or bronchitis. So we offer those. You get scheduled by calling our main line at 812-988-2231 and choose the nurse option. And those nurses that we have answering the phones, those nurses will talk to you and let you know if your symptoms qualify for our aftercare hours. I think another thing that people in Brown County might not know is not only do we offer primary care services, we also have the WIC, Women's Infants and Children Clinic, there every Monday. We also have urology that's just started. And so we have a urologist and a urology nurse practitioner, and they rotate every Monday. We also have cardiology once a month. And we also have, what else do we have?
Ortho.
Ortho. Ortho's been with us for a couple of years now. We see ortho once a week. So we have other services. I think ENT is interested in coming, ear, nose, and throat in 2026. So essentially what I can say is that IU Health really is vested in the healthcare in this community, and we wanted to bring healthcare to the community. So if you have any questions, don't hesitate to call the office, 812-988-2231. You can leave a message for the nurse line. You can also call the nurse line and ask to speak to the office manager, and they'll get a message to me. If you have any questions, I'll call you and give you the information I can. I've been back here for 3 years. I've been with IU Health 13 years, but wanted to come home to Brown County because I grew up here, and I just really wanted to help. Found out there was a new building coming and wanted to help facilitate that and do what I could to really help the residents in this county. So that's what we're trying
to
do.
Thank you so much. And you gave me a job.
I gave Lucy a job.
So I get to help with that plan.
Yeah, yeah. It's super exciting. We're excited. Not perfect, but we try. That's what we're here for.
This is Lucy Schultz on WFHB. I'm here with
Lori Owings from IU Health Nashville.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Our Brown County, a magazine for locals and visitors featuring art, entertainment, and county characters since 1995. Printed 6 times a year and available online. More information at rbrowncounty.com.
Our conversation with Justin Jett begins segment 2. Justin Jett grew up going to musical festivals and always dreamed of organizing his own. That dream came true with Pickin' in the Backwoods, featuring 37 bands on August 7th to the 9th at Explore Brown County with nightly public jam sessions. WFHB favorites The Deslons are headlining Friday night. Naturalist Jim Eagleman talks turtles. Learn how you can help keep Indiana box turtles off the endangered species list. We conclude this portion of the show with the Ross DeLong tune, High Life.
This is Chad Crothers for the Brown County Hour on WFHB. I am in the studio with the creator, founder, and executive producer of a new music festival called Pickin' in the Backwoods. Mr. Justin Jett is in our studio. Yeah. Welcome, Justin.
Thanks for having me.
Justin Jett, if that is your real name.
I know it. I'm not related to Joan Jett. Just the people are, just destroy that myth real quick.
Well, with a name like Justin Jett, you were born to be in radio, and I understand that you've got your own radio show as well.
Yeah, I stream a little bit of a podcast online. Started during COVID because everybody else was, you know, locked up. Might as well, you know.
But, so it's called the Coyote Radio Show and Podcast. So Justin Coyote Jett.
Yeah, it's kind of become a nickname. It's kind of cheesy, but it's people seem to remember it. So I'm letting it slide. You know, it's sticking. People are coming up to me and calling me Coyote. It's pretty funny.
Well, Justin, tell us about Pickin' in the Backwoods.
So, yeah, I had this crazy idea. I grew up around music. I love music. Been going to festivals and concerts. I mean, for it seems like a long time now. I mean, kind of nerd out with it and having a Microsoft Excel sheet now of every band I've seen and how many times since I was in fifth grade or whatever it was.
You do that too?
I know. It's crazy.
I love my spreadsheets.
But yeah, like I was saying with COVID happening, and I already had some friends that dabble in music and in the music business and, you know, nothing else to do. So I started a podcast to talk to people about music. And from there, it just kind of built to where, you know, start making connections and making friends, and came up with this wild idea that I wanted to throw a music festival one day. And I was just kind of, you know, joking around kind of in front of the owner that owns Duke's Indy. And he's like, let's do it. Because I like to take risks. You know, if it's calculated, let's do it.
So Duke's is involved.
Yep.
Because that's a legit honky tonk.
Oh, yeah.
I've been up there. The Lone Star Beer. The tattooed waitresses, that's the real deal.
Yeah.
Duke's is the real deal.
Yeah, I'll be honest, this festival would not be happening without Duke's Indy. So we've kind of joined forces, and last year was our first year, and I just was kind of shocked with the feedback we got and from everyone from bands to fans to management to the owners of Explore Brown County, and just in general, it's just been really good. So it's like, let's just keep going.
Let's talk about the artists that you've got lined up. Right away, it jumped out at me. I see you've got the Deslons out of New Orleans. Talk about that.
Yeah, they're amazing. And I feel like a lot of people in this region don't really know. They don't travel through here enough. And they've been at it for a while, and they deserve a lot more credit because they're one of the best bands live that you can go see, in my opinion. But I was down in Austin, Texas for South by Southwest and saw them perform 2 years ago. And it became to the point where I was actually following them to each venue, and we were staying at the same hotel, so I got to know the guys, and just amazing. So they're headlining Friday night.
All right, who else you got? Who else you got at Pickin' in the Backwoods?
Oh my gosh. First of all, I want to say it's a diverse mix. Pickin' in the Backwoods, I don't want people to strictly think about bluegrass, which there is some bluegrass there. So we got blues, Americana, folk, a little bit of rock blues mixed in there, all over the place. But our Saturday night headliner is Nolan Taylor, which he kind of took off and got picked up by a label. Now he's played the Opry and done all kinds of amazing things. Who else is on there? Man, there's so many. I'm bringing something a little different. I got a band coming up called the Honky Tonk Wranglers. And they're more of a 1950s, a little bit of 60s sound. And they dress the part. They got the suits, pedal steel, you know, the slick back hair sort of thing. And, you know, mix it up like that. There's just so many. We got 37 bands roughly.
Wow. And I heard you're taking good care of them too. You're feeding them, you're putting them up, late night jam sessions. It's like just kind of a, you know, one big family.
Yeah, it's definitely a community builder is the whole idea. And as far as like the bands go, we do everything we can to accommodate them. We put them all up in some shape or form, either at the cabins on the grounds or if we have to get a hotel, if those are full, we'll do it. There's retro campers on site that we put in, you know, and we shuttle them to and from stage, feed them in the green room, do whatever we can to keep them, you know, comfortable. And that all, you know, moves to the audience, basically. If they're good and feeling good and they go on stage and rock the place, the fans are loving it too. So it all just kind of works together.
Yeah, let's talk about the venue a little bit more. So you're at the Explore Brown County Campgrounds, 2620 Valley Branch Road. So talk about the location and how that works for your festival.
The location is really a big part of it. Like I said, I've gone to many shows and festivals all over the country, and this spot being in Brown County, just the geographic location and the history here, and that ground in particular, just the way it's set up with the way the hills roll in, there's, you know, a nice little pond on the backside of it, and it's just kind of, you're well shaded. Everything's close range. It's really nice. You got the wooden stage, and my banjo picking hero is Ralph Stanley, and to know that he's played that stage. So I was like, cool. You know, it's like the secret spot that's not so secret anymore. Like, it's super cool.
Okay, well, as we wrap up, just give us all the basic details in a nice little package.
Yeah, this weekend, 7th through the 9th, come stay. We got camping if you want that. We got single day tickets, or you can come the whole time. We got vendors of all sorts. Like I said, 37-something bands. We got dance lessons if you want to learn how to two-step honky-tonk or flat-foot buck dancing. We got campfire sets. And bring your instrument. We want everyone to come, and we'll have a jam tent there on site too if people just want to round up and play. Like I said, the whole thing is community building and people coming together, so good times.
And that's at Explore Brown County, 2620 Valley Branch Road here in Nashville.
Yep, everything in detail and all information is at pickinginthebackwoods.com. That's the best spot for everything, tickets and details.
Okay, remind us of that website one more time.
pickinginthebackwoods.com.
All right.
No G on picking. I got to clarify that.
No G. There's no G in picking.
Yeah, it's pick in.
No G allowed. It's pick in the backwoods.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, so glad to have you here, Justin. Thanks so much for coming on the show and talking about picking in the backwoods. We appreciate you coming in.
No, thanks for having me. It means a lot. Appreciate
it. All right.
It.
For the Brown County Hour, this is Chad Robert.
I stopped to move a box turtle the other day. Like you, I see them crossing blacktop and gravel roads here in the county, and we're told as long as we're safe from any traffic, coming or going, we want to help this critter. You've maybe done this kind gesture, then wondered what good it was. Will the lonely box turtle continue on being a box turtle, doing what box turtles do? Sure, and here in Indiana, the status of this primitive reptile has changed, so it needs some help. At least over the last 20 years, things have changed. It's now reached a category of concerned status. Not yet threatened or nearly threatened, so any help we can offer, well-intending and thoughtful, will no doubt aid the turtle in helping it survive our ever-changing environment. Our DNR non-game staff recognized box turtle status from communications with nearby states and saw similarities, so they conducted a few studies over the years you may be interested in. Namely, and most noteworthy, the box turtle is perfectly happy to spend its entire life within about a square mile of suitable habitat. Suitable habitat, that is, which means undisturbed, healthy woodlands, some open spaces for basking necessary for egg production, a clean water source, of course, and food like mushrooms, berries, insects, salamanders, and such, and no change, like building development, road construction, and mechanical disturbance. I refer to heavy construction equipment like bulldozers or tractors, and it's been shown that vibrations through the soil from earth-moving machines can cause undue stress to reptiles like snakes and turtles and even ground-nesting birds. This makes sense. It must sound like an earthquake to any animal close to the ground, turtles included. One result of a study over 2 years, and notably a longer study time was needed, was that of distribution. It was found that a low number of eggs the female produced occurred when a box turtle, either male or female, was removed from the habitat, and that this caused the remaining turtles to travel further within the range. Radio transmitters helped determine their actual movements, whether it was a male that came upon a rival male, or a female old enough to mate, their distribution over the range was important, so that removal of any turtle, either sex, would have a bearing on behavior. Their numbers now can determine if a population can continue. But even with one turtle removed, there can be serious consequences. This was why our conservation education program targeted the picking up of any turtle. Across a road, okay, yes, to keep it from being hit, but not to remove it any lengthy distance. You've heard to point it in the direction it was headed. When you first saw it, yes, this is good, as it gets it off the hot blacktop and into better surroundings. And a final word, if you're a turtle conservationist, and I hope you are, keep a bottle of hand sanitizer in the car and clean your hands after handling a turtle. They carry salmonella, and our well intentions can be compromised. And yes, all 4 feet have claws, so be aware if you get scratched. The sex of a box turtle is easily determined. Males have noticeable depressions on their belly shell. It's called the plastron. This helps when he finds a receptive female to mate. His eyes can be red, orange, or yellow compared to the female's brown eyes. To see the depression on the plastron, you'll have to turn him over again, but the eye color can be seen just by looking close. The upper shell is called the carapace, and it's covered with small sections that are called scutes. The caudal scutes located along the sides, so the anal scutes just above the tail. Vertebral scutes follow the pronounced ridge from the middle of the shell from head to tail. Counting the annular rings on any scute can help determine the age, like rings on a tree stump, but aren't actually accurate after 25 or so. The scutes are tightly attached to the carapace, but slough off on any turtle shell that you might find. Turtles can live 30 years or longer in ideal habitat, but the sun bleached and sometimes nibbled on by mice, the shell, like any bone or antlers, is a good source of calcium for any rodent that might find it. I have a few shells in my collection that hold paper clips and thumbtacks on my desk, a reminder of when and where I found the treasure, and I hope there's still box turtles there. I suppose enclosing yourself in a protective hard shell when danger is present will keep you from attack, and this is exactly what makes a box turtle. The hinge on the plastron can effectively close and seal it if a coyote or a coon wishes to try and open it. Once when hiking along a creek next to a steep ravine wall, we heard what sounded like a rock rolling down the hill towards us. Coming to rest at our feet after the rolling fall was a box turtle, maybe a bit dazed and dizzy, but soon the turtle turned himself over onto its feet and scampered off. Answering a question for us, can a turtle turn himself over if they happen to land upside down? Yeah, but it does present a problem a little bit. Box turtles have become scarce since I was a kid, when we'd find one crawling across the baseball diamond. Someone thought to paint a mark on the shell in hopes we'd see it again later on. We never did, even though we knew to look on the shell of others that we found that summer, and there seemed to be a lot. So the ones I see now, I'm happy they're still around. Jim Eagleman for Nature Ramblings in the Brown County Hour. Be a turtle conservationist, will you?
But I thought you said there were no good places here. I thought you said there were no good places here. So let me know if you already let me go. Leave me here alone in limbo while you figure this out on your own. 'Cause you know I've been bending over backwards, trying hard to fix it. Homesick for you when I'm home. And so I swear I won't be cold. Just let me know, darling, I'll let
beach in the Naples. Sand got caught in your hair. You looked me dead in the eyes and then closed them and filled me up with a sweeter air. Yeah, you filled me up with all of your air. And that was almost a year ago. Now where we're alone, you keep your zipper lips tight. It must be what I get loving a Scorpio. So happy. We've been faking this. I said we're off up with all of our friends, drinking high life on empty stomachs again, and it's obvious.
We pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from the Brown County Inn, located just off the main street of Nashville, Indiana, at 51 State Road 46 East. Brown County Inn is also a restaurant, bar, and gathering place for visitors and locals alike. More information at browncountyinn.com.
In our final segment, Phil McCown says the local churches serving as venues for the upcoming Chamberfest Brown County have perfect acoustics to really enjoy the kind of music you'll hear at Chamberfest, August 17th through the 23rd. Dave Seastrom shares a story about being middle-aged crazy, and we'll close the show with the Ross DeLong tune, Godspeed. But first, we begin segment three with a new recurring feature. The author of the photo book, Brown County Folks, Rick Albertson, shares meditations from his new book, Stoveside Surveys, while seated next to the wood stove in his cabin on Greasy Creek Road. Each episode has a companion photo you can view on our website, and Rick starts each stoveside survey with a description of that photo.
Lovingly gazing at a photo of my 14-year-old grandson who lives in urban Los Angeles. This day, he's a Hoosier in the forest. Wellies clad feet and legs, red earmuffs protecting his hearing, a large yellow axe thrust in challenge before a green wheelbarrow of his split firewood. He's a boy. He's 14. He's a city dweller, an urbanite. He loves to get away to the countryside. I love to spend time with my grandson, introducing him to so much of what I cherish in the outdoors, not unlike what my Grandpa Charlie did for me. At home in his blacktop world of cement, steel, and stucco, he has no friends nearby. He doesn't go out to play. He can't ride his bike around the block. He seldom sees the forest here for the trees. He is unused to solitude, alone in nature surrounded by far more trees than people. The forest is so quiet, the birds alone accosting his rare moment of silence. Adorned with red ear protection, a yellow-handled axe, and black rubber boots, his phone ever in his pocket, he's conquered a few rounds of red oak, so ready now to take on the world.
This is Chuck Wills with the Brown County Hour. We're speaking with Phil McCown of Chamberfest Brown County. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. And Chamberfest is an event coming up in Nashville, August 17th through 23rd, featuring chamber music, live musicians at various venues around town.
Absolutely. And this is our fifth year. And the format has basically been the same, but it just keeps getting better every year.
Well, tell us about that. What is the format?
Okay. It is a concert every evening, free concerts every evening on that Sunday, the 17th through Saturday, the 23rd. And we're just so fortunate the community has gotten in back of it completely. And the venues, with the exception of the Playhouse, are all churches. And not only is that great for us in the community, but it turns out the acoustics in the churches are perfect for chamber music. And maybe I ought to explain what that is.
Yeah, please do.
Chamber music is small ensemble classical music. Our artistic director, Andreas Yanidis, defines it as 2 to 10 musicians. The classic is a string quartet or quintet or piano quintet, something like that. And it's classical music, but it's the full range, all the way from Renaissance to, oh gosh, we've had works that were done since the year 2000. So it's free concerts. They start at 7 o'clock every evening. They're in the various churches. I might as well mention them.
Yeah, please do.
The United Methodist Church has amazing acoustics. St. Agnes Catholic Church. It's a beautiful space, big space. And then this year, we're going to add the New Life Church on the Saturday night as well. That's a new addition this year. Chamber music is virtually never amplified. The musicians just don't like it. They really don't. And they don't need it, really. So, and it just makes it that much more intimate when it's just natural acoustics. So, that's the general idea.
Okay. Well, tell us about the artists that are involed this year.
Well, we've got, every year it just keeps getting better and better. Andreas Yanidis is our artistic director. He has a doctorate in piano performance from IU Jacobs School of Music, so he's top-notch. In fact, he studied with Menachem Pressler, who started the Beaux-Arts Trio, basically reincarnated the piano trio for classical musicians. And Andreas is now teaching in Dublin, Ireland, but he comes back every year for Chamberfest. And through his connections through IU, he's gotten people in from all over the world. We've had the Pacifica Quartet, and they'll be coming back. They were our headliner group the first year. They really got us off the on the map in 2021, and they're coming back this year. They do 200 concerts all over the world. It's the resident string quartet for IU. They're 2-time Grammy winners. I mean, they are really top notch. We've had the Lincoln String Quartet, which are principal players from the Chicago Symphony. And several of them are coming back this year. They'll be playing. Let's see. Oh, Jim Campbell from Toronto, clarinet, recognized as the outstanding musician in Canada 1 year across the board. Amazing. We have the first chair oboe of the La Scala Opera.
So, Phil, you're listing off artists that are really global.
Absolutely.
Artists.
Absolutely.
How do you find these people to attract them to Little Nashville, Indiana?
We rely on our artistic director, Andreas Ioannidis. He's a superb pianist in his own right. And in fact, he'll be performing as well. And then also Annie Hawk, our president, lived in Chicago for quite some time and made all these amazing connections with groups in Chicago, which of course is a huge music scene. A lot of it's just, you know, the musical community. And they love coming here. I can't get over it. Every year it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. I'm looking at our brochure here. I hope if you're here in Nashville, I hope you'll find these brochures scattered around town. I know you can get them at the Visitor Center, for example. And they really have all the information, including pictures, dates, times, the playlists, the whole works. I might as well plug the website right now, because that's where all the information is. Chamberfest, Brown County, all one word, .com. And you can go there. You can get the festival dates and times and biographies of the artists, not only this year, but previous years, and even an opportunity to donate online. Chamberfest Brown County is a 501c3 nonprofit. We are all volunteer. The only thing that involves money is paying the artists, and they richly deserve it. We live and die on donations and sponsorships. The number of people that sponsor this, if you get the brochure or you go to the website, you'll see all the logos on the back. There are easily 25 local organizations, businesses, restaurants, nonprofits. The Brown County Community Foundation has given generously every year. They really got us rolling back at the beginning. Nashville Arts and Entertainment Commission, which represents the town of Nashville, very generous donations. I shouldn't go into this too far because there's so many here and they're all just amazing people. The restaurants in particular have just been great, and they're beginning to recognize this brings people in, not just Columbus and Bloomington, but from all over the state, all over the region. And it's good for the community.
Yeah. Well, Phil, thanks for joining us today to talk about Chamberfest. Again, you can learn more at chamberfestbrowncounty.com. And that takes place here in town, August 17th through 23rd. And we've been speaking with Phil McCown. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Middle age crazy. Now that I'm in my early 70s, I look back with great fondness to my attempt to prolong youth and provide a great adventure during my middle years. As a lifelong sailor, I wanted to break out of the impounded water of small lakes. I dreamed of open seas and vast horizons, distant destinations, and creating tales of exciting adventure. I decided to up my game the way I always do by reading every book on the subject I could get my hands on. Buying an appropriate-sized sailboat in good condition was outside of my budget. The plan I came up with was to purchase a cheap but salvageable boat, rebuild it, and sail into the sunset. My wife Becky is always on the lookout for any kind of bargain, and during a conversation she had with a customer when she was working at Oliver Winery, an older lady suggested that she and her husband had a boat that we might be interested in, and they were willing to let it go for a song. The 1972 32.5-foot center cockpit sloop, built by the Irwin Company in Florida, was at the Indian Creek Marina in Michigan City, and we decided to take the long drive and have a look. The Enchantress sank at the dock the year before because the water in the bilge had frozen and cracked open the aft portion of the keel, allowing the water to pour in. Hauled out and set in the row of misery in the boneyard against the back fence, the poor old gal was a sorry mess. The interior was covered with mold, the engine was highly questionable, and she stank to be damned. Just about everything needed to be repaired or replaced. We made what I thought was a lowball offer, and after paying far too much, we had a deal. My current friend and former brother-in-law, Dale, wanted to join in the madness, and he became my partner. This began a month-long odyssey where I would spend half of the week earning money so I could drive across the state and spend it on the boat. My only time off was during the long drives back and forth. The first order of business was filling a dumpster with everything rotten and scrubbing the hell out of the boat's interior to get rid of the mold. As soon as that was done, we had a place to stay and we slept under the glaring lights of the marina on the boat. When the folks at the marina realized that not only was I serious about restoring this vessel and I was making progress, they decided to relocate the boat to the middle of the parking lot where I had easier access to water and power. Indian Creek Marina was located in the crack neighborhood of Michigan City. The local liquor store had a large sign outside that read, "No Begging." From time to time, the sound of my orbital sander was augmented by small arms fire. The exchange of gunfire would be followed by the sounds of many sirens arriving at the scene. The Enchantress had a large encapsulated lead keel, and when the gunfire broke out in the neighborhood, I moved around to the opposite side of the boat and continued working. After learning the ins and outs of epoxy, the cracked hull was repaired, as were four places where the original boat cradle had pushed into the sides of the hull, weakening the fiberglass. After several months of hard work in the hot sun, the hull was repaired and painted to gleaming perfection. The water and the waste systems were replaced and the engine was repaired. The day finally came when we launched into Lake Michigan and began our journey to the Gulf of Mexico. On our way to the first leg in Chicago, the engine started to fail, and we barely made it back to our slip at Indian Creek. My mechanic friend Murph said further repairs were useless, and he found a used replacement engine in Canada and had it shipped to us. Removing the old engine and installing the new one delayed us by several weeks. By this time, the warm weather had passed us by, and when we finally relaunched, it was early November. My friend and neighbor Mike joined me for the 1,000-mile journey through the inland waterways all the way to Mobile Bay in Alabama. She was eventually sailed to Pine Island, off the coast of Fort Myers, where we had some property. We sailed that boat for more than a decade, and on the second best day of a sailor's life, she was sold. Did we have adventure? Yes. Did it cost a fortune? Yes. And was it crazy? Absolutely. This is Dave Seastrom. See you next time.
As I pulled into the Kroger parking lot, that I missed things how they used to be. No matter which direction the string is pulling me, my head can still be
corner's where I stay, where I totaled my first car on the hottest summer's day. Sat there by a building since torn down, 'cause God knows they don't have enough apartments in this town. Panicked on the phone to my dad, felt I was losing everything I'd never had. Godspeed, baby, don't you wait around for the misery. Bitter looking back has never really had a place in my history. And Godspeed, too, to the pieces of you that will always exist in 2022. I always miss the feeling lost. I always miss feeling lost till I don't. Years ago, that corner house was Alex's place. The first spot back in freshman year, I visited to blaze. Greened out on the mattress with a vengeance, just until another instance where somebody showed me kindness. Godspeed, baby, don't you wait around for the misery. Yeah. Bitter looking back has never really had a place in my history. And Godspeed too to the pieces of you.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 161 of the Brown County Hour. This show was recorded in our studio at the History Center here in downtown Nashville and brought to you the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m. and anytime online. Be sure to look for us on your favorite streaming services.
The Brown County Hour is brought to you by a diverse group of folks who believe, now more than ever, the world is for everyone.
This show was produced by
Chuck Wills,
Pam Rader,
Rick Fettig,
Vera Grubbs,
Lucy Schultz,
Sarah Lytle,
Chad Crothers,
and Dave Seastrom. We would also like to thank Slats Klug for our theme music. You have been listening to the Brown County Hour,
coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana.
Celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County. Home.